Courtside Indiana podcast brought to you by Box Out Sports. Box Out Sports is a leading online graphic solution giving you the ability to create professional content in seconds to highlight your team and student athletes during a season. You can sign up for a free demo at boxoutsports.com. Courtside Indiana podcast is available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify as well as SoundCloud. You can subscribe via each of those apps and have them delivered straight to your phone, tablet, or desktop. We would appreciate a rating as well as a review on either of those apps. Welcome to episode 64 of Courtside Indiana podcast. We are, we've got a special guest today, but as always, we're joined by Zach Tyler. Zach, how was your day yesterday?
Busy day. I didn't get to watch many games. I wasn't home until evening game, so I got to see the second half and overtime of the Carmel Lawrence North game.
Girls soccer is just kicking your butt, isn't it?
It's kicking my butt already. It's going to kill me this AAU season too, unfortunately. We'll see.
Is it really? All right. Well, we'll have to – we'll dock your pay.
Yep.
10% of nothing is that's going to change pretty soon. We're also joined by Joey Moreland. Those who don't know, Joey Moreland is a former basketball player, star player at Fort Wayne Blackhawk Christian, and he is now a two-time state championship basketball assistant coach.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
How's that feel?
It's pretty cool, especially never have been able to do it as a player, to be able to come back and be on staff with those guys and experience it through a different, little bit different light as a coach, but nonetheless still really, really exciting, really fun to be a part of.
Do you Now you work for your dad for now.
Yep.
Which that's I understand what that's like.
Yeah.
As you know. So you might remember. I don't know if you do or not. And Joey played for me when he came through high school. So we've got a good connection there. And I was happy for him to be able to go through what he's gone through. Especially since one of my better memories watching kids play and win a championship was LaPel. Beating Blackhawk at Lafayette Jeff. Of course, that's the big school versus the private – or the little school versus the private school thing, you know? So there was that going on. I can't remember who Blackhawk had back then, but then Jason Holsinger was a kid that just put LaPel on his back and had a heck of a game. But how far – what was the furthest you got in high school? Was it regional finals, right?
Regional semifinal. We played – Marquette Catholic both years. My junior year they won state, my senior year they were state runner-up. So
Physicus in that group,
yep,
basically is who you guys just couldn't get through them.
Yeah, my junior year I think it was like 15 or 20 points my junior year, and my senior year we lost in overtime by like I think it ended up being 10 after free throws and stuff at the end. But
yeah,
it sucked both times. It wasn't any more fun one time over the other, so.
And we were supposed to I'm supposed to give a shout out to your father for allowing you time off on Monday mornings to listen to the podcast every week. Evidently, he didn't know that I podcasted. It's like, why are you taking time? Why are you listening to? And so this is a little irony. So now your dad's going to listen to this. We're not. Does he know you're doing this?
I mentioned it to him. I got up and ran out, and he's like, "Where are you going?" I was like, "Oh, I got to be in a podcast with Reamer." And 5 minutes.
Ah, daggone it. All right. Well, we were going to surprise him with the, you know, thanks for letting Joey take time off work when actually it's Sunday night when we're recording this. And and now you won't have to listen. So your dad owes me a solid now, because now you're part of the podcast. You won't have to listen to it. So we're going to break away from that. We're going to go right into our recruiting stuff like we do every week or every Sunday. And then we're going to talk about these games that we saw yesterday, some of which were exciting, some of which weren't. But we're going to get into it like we do every Sunday. So Zach, go ahead and fill us in on what we've missed recruiting wise the last week.
Yeah. Okay. So Noah Harris from Noblesville down by you, yep. Jim, he got a Concordia offer. That's an NAI school up in Michigan. Brian Waddell has been busy this week. Also, he had a Miami, Ohio offer and Indiana State offer, both coming before the state championship game. As well as Shamar A. Vance, he got an Indiana State offer as well. Also played in the state championship game. Lincoln Hale has been busy since his release from Indiana State with the new coaching change and everything there. Indiana Wesleyan hopped on him right away. Also Fairmont State did, and UIndy as well. So he's hearing from a couple schools from in here, in state here, and then one in, I think Fairmont is in Virginia, West Virginia, I believe, a D2 in West Virginia.
Got to be West Virginia, because I don't think we've got any non D1 schools from Virginia in our database.
Okay.
And you didn't ask me to add Fairmont State.
I did not ask you, no.
So that means I was on it. That means they're in like a – I think they might be in the same conference as Indiana Tech, maybe.
That could be, yeah.
Yeah.
Not Indiana Tech, because they're D2.
Oh, IU East.
IU East is NAIA also.
Yeah, one of those schools. They're in somebody's conference, because you didn't ask me to add them, so we must be all right on that one.
Yep. Another offer we haven't heard from Keon Thompson in a while. He's got another offer, though, from Purdue Fort Wayne. I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about that with him being down at prep school in Florida.
Gosh, we've got a lot baked into this one, don't we?
Yeah. And then a huge commitment, I feel like, for St. Francis. Nalen Thompson staying home, and he's going to go to St. Francis for Coach Lacrosse.
That's a huge pickup for them. I mean, he's a guy that was had some low D1 offers, right?
Yeah, Cleveland State, I believe.
Yeah.
And there was another one, I think, too.
And sometimes those offers – go away. I mean, Joey's gone through the recruiting process, and he experienced committing to a coach that took a new job before he got there. So he's, you know, the recruiting stuff is never, it all sounds exciting and fun, but it's just not always. It's not always exciting and fun, is it? Sometimes it's nerve wracking. Joey, what do you think of Nalen?
Nalen's tough. Like you said, I think that's an absolute steal for St. Francis. We play obviously lures every year.
Right.
And he's the last 2 years he's been really good against us, and granted he doesn't have a ton of help on that lures team, so he looks even better, but the dude can play. He gets to the rim really well, finishes really well, and even this year as compared to last year, I think he improved his outside shot even a little bit, and if he can keep doing that, the dude is going to be unstoppable, especially at the NAI level. But he can definitely play, and that's a good get for St. Francis. I'm excited to watch him play with Zane over there too.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
Zach is a big, big Crossroads League guy. He's friends with Lightfoots, and he's connected with Bethel, or at least was connected with Bethel.
Yeah, still am.
So he's always pitching Crossroads, and you know, we've had Joey, you and I, we've had these NAIA talks before about how competitive that league is, and you know, a lot of guys. We've got a lot of stuff baked in this recruiting stuff. We may end up going longer on this than I thought, but a lot of these guys, I definitely didn't plan on having this discussion with Joey on, but you know, you went to play, you opted to play at Florida Southern at a time when they were really good, and they may still be really good. I don't know. I don't follow it, but their coach had he was an Indiana connection. It was Sean McDermott's uncle, Link Darner. And obviously Sean and you were tight. And Link prioritized you, and that was enough for you to go that far from home. None of us thought you would go that far away from home, to be honest. And it's nice that your family can afford to make that trip and maybe even one time fly me down just for kicks and giggles, I guess. By the way, thanks, Jim, for doing that. I enjoyed the trip. but the reality is, staying on point here, is that sometimes when guys – don't get their dream, then the next best thing is being close to home and being where your family can see you play. And
yeah.
I mean, Joey always wanted to play for Duke, and you know, that didn't happen. And then, you know, you're looking at D1 schools and, you know, trying to find a good fit there. And then look, you know, Division II national champions, that's pretty good, especially when one of your teammates was Michael Volovic. So,
yeah.
Which, you know, me, I love that kid. So I guess the point there is it's nice for Nalen that he gets to be home. He gets to win in his hometown. It's a winning program. I think he's got a chance to be an immediate impact player. And I agree with your assessment, Joey, of his abilities. And I know his outside shot is developing, and his coach is a friend of mine. And you know, we've talked a lot about him over the last couple of years. And I'm guessing just being close was a big deal. So, and it doesn't hurt that St. Francis wins. So, Noah Harris, Noblesville. I love him. He's a guy that, you know, he's a little undersized if you're like a Division II school, Division I school. But I think if his outside shot improves, I think if you look at him and think this is a part of his game that you can really work on and really make better, I think he's a really good GLVC, you know, Division II caliber power forward who's skilled. He's definitely a top guy in their scouting report this past year. And, you know, he was not a high volume 3-point shooter, but his shot mechanics are nice. And you could really see it in him. And he's just, he was a tough matchup. He was a tough matchup for Carmel. He was a tough matchup, in most of their games. And, you know, he's, I think if he goes to that level, I think that's going to be another kid that is a steal. So, Keon Thompson, Zach, what are we learning here? Are we learning that?
Yeah, we're kind of learning in this case that he's not getting too many offers that he would have if had he stayed around. I feel like he's kind of in the same ballpark. Wouldn't we agree on that?
Right. Yeah. He's not gonna. I mean, again, we've talked a lot about prep school, and not too often does it really make a jump in your recruitment, because it doesn't change your ceiling. It might change your floor, but it doesn't change your ceiling. So hold on one second. Obviously Waddell's had a big week with his offers kind of jumping up a level. I think that's a really good spot for him as far as that upper level mid-major opportunity. Shamar Avance finally gets that type of an offer too. We've been kicking around why he hasn't gotten one. He didn't have a great state final game against Carmel, but he is definitely, he really could help Indiana State. And I think that's a great opportunity for him. Then the flip of that is Indiana State makes those two offers. Lincoln Hale ends up decommitting. Obviously new coaching situation playing a big role there. Probably not as mutual as what it's being made to be. I think he was probably really the tiptoe top of his ceiling going there. I don't know that I ever viewed him as a Missouri Valley guy. I thought maybe he could be a low D1 guy because he shoots the ball really well. But, you know, I think if he ends up in the GLVC, that's going to be a good spot for him.
Or even have you seen him? Westland, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, have you seen? Yeah, I know. I guess I always rank up. I'm probably as guilty of that as anybody. And we talk about how great the GLVC or how great the Crossroads League is. I'm always the one that's saying guys that like that are under recruited. So, but had you seen Lincoln play, Zach, at all?
No, I have not.
I mean, he's 6'4". He's a really good shooter. I think he would struggle in the Missouri Valley guarding the wing. And I think that's where he ends up. His level is what he can guard. We've heard that before, right, Joe? Your yes. level. You can't nod. Yeah, nodding on a podcast doesn't work. We're not doing the video.
Yes, we have.
Yeah, we have heard that before. It's what you can guard is what you are. And even sometimes versatile guys end up being in a situation where they're still better at lower levels because then they can guard multiple positions. So,
I forgot one also, Will Shank.
Yeah.
From over in Joey's area there, committed to Western Reserve Academy.
Okay. Is that a Division III?
I'm not sure what that is.
I think it is.
I don't know if that or prep school or grad school.
Oh, that could be.
I'd been told that he was looking at going to prep school and trying to harvest some more interest. Yeah, so I would assume it's a prep school, but that's just okay. Based on what I heard. So
right, yeah. Looking at some of their stuff on Twitter, they played Spire, which is also a prep
okay. It's a prep school.
There,
yeah, so, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you just yeah. Look, I mean, kids go to prep schools for personal reasons, and that's fine. But a lot of times it's. Especially kids that go that late, the post-grad stuff. Look, post-grad's fine too. That's a different deal. You go to Bosco, places like that, those are good situations. I think they work for kids that had their recruiting tail off because of an injury, or, you know, maybe a kid that I'm not sure how the test score component works now with post grads. If you can completely, if you can rework your test and get, you know, improve your eligibility as a freshman, you should probably know that. I know you can't change your core GPA at that point. But yeah, and back to Thompson, he just, his recruiting hasn't really taken a jump or really changed much at all. So, I mean, I hope he's enjoyed the experience, and I'm hoping that there were other reasons other than just wanting a bigger stage, because I just, especially with Indiana kids, I just don't believe prep school gives them a bigger stage. I realize I'm biased, you know, to each their own, but I mean, Elevation Prep, was there anything unique about that situation, Joe? You don't have to comment if you don't want.
I mean,
did you feel like they walked in? I mean, they walked in. Do you feel overwhelmed at any point during those games? Like,
no, I mean, not
during that game, I should say.
But I think we're also in a different position than most teams playing them would be also with the team that we have.
True. But, you know, they're seeking and touting, you know, we're going to, all of our guys are big time. They're going to.
Yeah.
I mean, I know you've got First, and First is really damn good. By the way, I voted for him for Mr. Basketball. So
I remember hearing that on your podcast. I told my dad. As soon as I heard
that. Yeah. All right, let's move on to these games. The 1A game, Bar Reef took care of business. Basically, the first two games went kind of the way we thought they would. It was – Couts was going to have to shoot the lights out to hang with Bar Reef. And they went 5 for 23 from 3. That is not shooting lights out. That may be no, – let's just be polite. They did not shoot the ball very well.
Yep.
Cale Wireman got going a little bit. I mean, all their threes were in the second half, and they were 0 for their first 10 – I think in the first half, without digging through quarter by quarter box scores, but the Wiremans did not shoot the ball well, especially Cale. And you know, whatever, Bar Reeve didn't shoot the ball particularly well either, other than Hope, you know, taking care of his situation, but he was 7 for 13 from the free throw line. But it's just, it became a difference. You talk about possession basketball. Bar Reeve had 10 offensive rebounds. Couts had 6. Now, people got to understand, sometimes it's not about how many you get. It's the percentage of rebounds on that end of the floor. Bar Reeve got 10 offensive rebounds on fewer misses than what Couts got on more misses. And I haven't really broken down. I don't see any of the percentages. We don't have any advanced stats, but that's an underrated part of offensive rebounds. They may have out-rebounded them only by 4 in the offensive end, but they got a much larger percentage of their own misses than what Couts did, and I'm going to guess they converted on most of them, because a lot of them, I mean, Hope got 8 of the 10, and he wasn't missing too many in those situations. I love the fouls drawn stat here that we've got. Kurt Hope drew 9 fouls. I love that stat. You know, and I think Bryson Graber, who I really love watching him play, we have some records that were broken this game. Bryson was one of them. He had 13 assists. That is now an all-time record for not just 1A, but the entire state championship game. He is the 1A record was 11. No, it was 10. The overall record was 12. He has 13 now. 6 rebounds, and he did not score until the 4-something mark of the fourth quarter. He just doesn't shoot the ball very much. In fact, he passed up some shots that – he passed up 2 opportunities that led to him fouling eventually in that possession, where it could have just been maybe not an easy layup, but certainly a better decision than what he did. But it's really hard to fault the way he plays, because he really gets everybody involved. And you've got his, you've got the other Graber, especially Devin, who at 13, Hagen Nepp, his usual 16 points, rebounds pretty well. He had 10 rebounds. And then Hope, so much of what they do is revolving around getting him the ball. 23 points, 19 rebounds. That 19 rebound is a 1A record. It is not an overall record. He broke the record previously held by Bobby Jolliffe from Hauser. The overall record is 26. Jerry Hall did it in 1999 for Muncie South, and Cody Zeller did it his junior year, 2010. 26 rebounds is a lot of damn rebounds. So, so that game went, you watched, was, the game was pretty much over when you got there, right, Joe?
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, Bar Reeve was really in control the entire time that I was at least there watching the game. So there wasn't much of a hope for Couts to come back, but it was, I mean, Bar Reeve just really stinking good, obviously, especially at the 1A level with as many weapons as they have with Hope, Nepp, Graber, the younger Graber that comes in and shoots the ball off the bench. The other, I can't remember his name, the other really good shooter they have that comes off the bench.
Kidwell.
When you can use that many weapons, and especially when Hope plays that well and just makes everybody else that much more open, it's going to be really hard to beat him. And, but yeah, to your point, when I had tuned in, it was pretty much sealed away.
The Kidwell kid, we've talked about him an awful lot. He gets probably more airtime per minute, per shot than anybody else in the state. He hit 2 threes in the Carmel game, and all of a sudden you're just like, oh my God, this kid's never going to miss. He was just making me nervous. And
what's his name?
Tommy Kidwell.
Yeah.
Number 40.
Yep.
And he came in, he played 3 minutes in this championship game, but he was, of course, 1-for-1 from the 3-point line. And, you know, and you're thinking at any moment they could bring him back in, and he's just going to stand in the corner, not stand, but he's going to be moved to the corner and spread you out, and you can't leave him.
Yeah.
And that just gives Hope so much space. It's not a whole lot different than what you guys do with First. So, or do at times with First.
Well, when we played Bar Reeve at the Hall of Fame Classic, I think they started the game 9 of 9 for 3.
Yeah.
And the younger Graber was 5 of 5. And I think Kidwell was either 2 of 2 or 3 of 3. And they was just, seemed like, well, literally for the first 9-10 shots, everything they threw up went in, and it just felt like they were never going to miss.
Who started in place of the Caden Graber? Because he started in this game. He has not started before, or I shouldn't say before. He did not start earlier in the year.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you the kid's name. I don't.
Was it Jameson Miller, maybe?
It might have been, but whoever it was didn't do anything that I remember what his name was. So.
Yeah, statistically at least, yeah. I mean, I liked the way the Wiremans played. They just – you can tell when on the regular – I mean, they played some big schools. They played in the Pizza Hut shootout down at Terre Haute, which that's going to get them some games. They played Bloomington South, gave them a good game. Bar Reeve was able to play them without Trevor Taylor, and Bar Reeve beat Bloomington South. But, again, it was without one of their weapons. But Couts gave them a great game, and you know, the Knifel kids are both 6'4", shoot the ball. Those are their two best shooters. And Parker Knifel went 0-for-0. He didn't even get a 3. And Hunter Knifel went 0-for-4. So I got to believe that Coach Thompson felt pretty good just with those two numbers alone. That those are the guys that usually create the space for Cole and Kale to create. And Kale's more of the point guard creating type, and Cole's more of the scorer, even though Kale has good numbers. But at least statistically, that's the way it plays out. And I think everybody kind of feels that Cole is the more complete player of the two. But I think Coach Thompson had to be pretty pleased with just in terms of the volume that Knifel, the two Knifel kids did not get. No different than the talk when we've talked about Homestead in the past, about sometimes Homestead is not necessarily about the percentage they shoot, but the number of threes that they shoot in the game and what makes them better or harder to beat. So, but man, the Wiremans were chucking them late, and they had to get back in it. So, I mean, that game started out just tight just because nobody shot the ball well. And then, you know, Bar Reeve didn't get a whole lot better. And but they were definitely better shooting the ball than Couts, and it just didn't go well for Couts. So anybody got anything before we move on to the game? No, to
I mean, I kind of talked about that Couts stuff before and how they were going to have trouble with Bar Reeve's length. And we knew Hope was going to be an issue from the beginning also. And Couts likes to get up and down the court, and they weren't able to do that because they also weren't getting second chance points.
Yeah.
Sound of things either.
You can't run if you can't rebound.
Yeah.
And if you're going to shoot, I mean, they shot 21% in the first quarter, 27% in the second quarter. Third quarter, they had a little hope. They did kind of cut in the lead a little bit, but it just never really got too serious.
Yep.
And Bar Reeves shot the ball incrementally better every quarter and got to the free throw line more overall. So
it was fun to watch Bar Reeves win. Blackhawks kind of built a friendly rivalry with Bar Reeves over the last couple of years. I think it was the 17-18 season they went down to that North Davie shootout, and that was the first time we had played Bar Reeves.
Right.
And went down the year after that, and then obviously played him in state in that 18-19 year and playing him in the Hall of Fame Classic this year. And I think someone told me a stat. It was, I think, in the last, like, 3 years, they've lost something like 7 games, and 4 of those games have been to us. And they're always close and competitive. But it was really fun to watch them win just after having that friendly rivalry and camaraderie with them, and especially with how – and everybody's been supportive, but – Coach Thompson's been very supportive of Coach Davidson with everything he's going through. And so it was really fun to see them finally win it.
Yeah. You guys were 2A this year because of the success factor, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And that's not going to change next year. Definitely not going to change next year, 'cause they're not even revisiting anything along those lines. So Blackhawk Christian versus Park Heritage. What do we know about Park Heritage, Joe?
I mean, they're a solid 2A team, and I think they surprise a lot of people coming through regionals, especially with how handily they beat Shenandoah. I mean, I remember after our regional game against Bowman, we just kind of assumed that we get to state, it's going to be Shenandoah there waiting for us.
Right.
So after our regional game, we were checking all the scores and saw Shenandoah lost. And not only did they lose, they lost by, I think it was 19.
They got bumped.
Like, it was like, holy crap, this team's for real. And they're good. The Christian Johnson kid is going to be really tough.
Yeah. I like him. He's such a strong kid, and look, he's an early maturing kid. But he's been a point guard the whole time. So he is – we talk – Joe, I'm always going back to these conversations Joe and I have, you know, that I have with a lot of kids that I coach. But Christian, sometimes, you know, early maturing kids get a lot of extra – you know, a lot of early exposure because they're dominant, and sometimes they fade away because they don't work on their game. They think the game just continues to come as easily as it has. But the one thing that – you can pretty much count on is if a kid like Christian, who is definitely an early maturing kid, but he played the point. He was always a primary ball handler and extremely skilled in the process. So he's used to being the strongest kid on the court most games.
Yeah.
You know, give or take maybe some seniors that they might play on their schedule that are a little bit stronger. But you could see him struggle finishing. I mean, he was 2 for 11. You know, so he was 2 for 8 inside a 3-point line. You could see him struggling with just how much more physical you guys could be.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, even Davidson is just, again, he's a strong kid. He's 2 years and he's 2 years older.
Yeah. Well, we ended up, obviously you watched the game, but we ended up matching Boyer against him. And
yeah,
that might be one of the guys on the floor that was pound for pound stronger than Johnson. And I think that affected him, at least you talked getting inside and finishing wise, because Boyer did a pretty good job on him, I thought.
Well, and the pound for pound things is a good point. I mean, Boyer's probably what, your power forward. I mean,
Yeah.
had to have one of his better games. He averaged 7 points a game and he had 12 in the first half when Furst was on the bench with foul trouble.
Is Boyer's the one that looks like he bales hay all summer, right?
Yes, that is the amount of
Yeah, he's got the tan marks on it, or the on his arms. I love him.
Yeah, he's been really good for us this year. He struggled a little bit in the regional semifinal rounds, but man, did he step up Saturday, and we needed it in a big way, and he was there ready to go. So
The and look, as strong as he is, let's say Christian gets by him, now he's just got first waiting for him, and that is just, and Boyer's long too.
yes.
So basically anywhere he went, he was gonna have somebody that could match with him physically, even if he was able to get by Boyer.
Yeah, he's long, and he's pretty deceptively quick defensively. I mean, you wouldn't look at him if just walking down the street and think, oh, he can guard four positions and four or five positions. And he was honestly all year one of our better on-ball defenders, and there was a lot of games where he drew the best defensive assignment because Coach Davidson felt the most confident in him being an on-ball defender. And like I said, if you looked at him, you wouldn't think that, but he's proven time and time again that he can do a job on other teams' best players, no matter what position they are.
Look, all these teams have guys like that. I mean, that most of us kind of take for granted. I kind of become a mouthpiece for, the couple of kids on Carmel who don't do a lot of scoring but are really good defenders, and Boyer's, just one of those guys. I mean, he's, when we preview stuff here, especially with our write-ups that are, I have names in a database. It's basically all first Burke and Davidson. And that's just simply just because of offensive numbers and trying to draw a line somewhere, usually around the 9, 10 point mark. We tend to not dive too deeply on some of those previews, but then equally impressed with Connor Davis from Park Heritage, at least the game he had against you guys, and at least the way he was able to get some shots off over first. I'm sure at some point first got to the point where he just was worried about being not committing fouls. But he had two fouls pretty early and then didn't get any more fouls the rest of the way.
I think Davis did most of his damage in the first half
He did, yeah.
after first had gone out and it was sitting, and it was him and Boyer matching up, and I think there was two or three possessions where they got the ball on one side of the floor and Davis sealed on the weak side and they lobbed over and he got an easy layup. And then he so go ahead.
No, go ahead. You roll. I talk. I Dude, I talk enough on these things. You're good.
And then I think he was like 6 for 6 from the free throw line, or
He was.
very high percentage, whatever it was, from the free throw line. And I think when Caleb checked back in second half, it weathered him out a little bit. But there were still a couple of times he got buckets because Caleb went over to help, and he was really good moving off the ball and finding the open spots, low block, short corner areas. And I mean, still did some damage in the second half, but he's a solid player, and he moves well for a guy his size. And I thought he gave him a big lift because in the first, especially first half, they weren't getting much from anybody else.
No, and Noble got his one basket early, but then he picked up two fouls, the second of which was kind of silly, just because it was so far away from the basket. Well, and that's where Caleb's second basket was 83 feet away.
Yeah, that was
I was surprised. I was surprised. Have you guys pressed much this year?
We have a little bit here and there, more so second half of the year.
Okay.
But
Which I haven't seen any of your game. I mean, I saw the game early at Southport, and then I saw the Hall of Fame games on stream.
yeah, the game that I think it was really the first time that we pressed was Snyder. And we
Okay.
were down 16 at half and just played horrible. And Snyder came out and they shot seriously 80% in the first half. They just couldn't miss. And we came out in a full court press, trapping everything. And I think at the end, it ended up being like a 32-6 run to start the third quarter. And we're like, well, crap, maybe we need to press a little bit more and make this part of our game plan. So,
yeah, I thought it was, I thought maybe Park Heritage could, if once they got by first, could try to take advantage of it, of the back, you know, the back end of it.
Yeah.
But they just didn't.
Yeah. Well, I think that was, I think that was their game plan too, is just to slow it way down. I mean, their coach had mentioned a couple of times that they wanted to make it a defensive game. And I mean, if you get in a track meet with us, that's definitely going to play to our strength. So I think even when they did break the press, they wanted to still slow it down and just try to grind out possessions.
And I would do everything I could with first behind me.
Yeah, I know. I agree.
You know, we talk a lot about beating the press and making people pin the back end, and you know, first is such an imposing player. He's the top of the press. He picks up his second foul, you know, 83 feet away from the basket, effectively not a good foul, basically. Yeah. Has to sit the rest of the half. And then he, you know, the press came off, and then they never looked to take advantage of it. And I thought that would have been a good opportunity to get to the rim and make plays. But how many times have you seen Caleb just shoot one free throw in a game?
Never.
Did that resonate in real time? Like, I mean, he only drew one foul the whole game.
I'm just realizing that now as you're saying it. I didn't even.
It's a great stat.
Yeah, no, that's, I guarantee you it's less than three times in his career that he shot one free throw.
You know, when I first noticed that stat was your team with KJ Walton.
Oh, yeah?
Because, like, one game I think he drew something like, I don't know, 11 fouls. And I was like, what the heck is that stat? Like, couldn't, trying to figure out why, because it was, you know, stood out because it was double digits.
Yeah.
And then I dug a little deeper, and it was, yeah, fouls drawn. I was like, what the heck is FD? But, yeah, so I it's kind of a cool stat. I mean, but, yeah, Caleb first just drew one foul and only shot one free throw the whole game.
Yeah.
I bet that's the first time he's ever – well, I bet that's one of the few times he's ever fouled more than he's been fouled.
It has to be.
Especially as much as he's hung on to. So.
Yeah.
Zach, anything? You didn't get to watch this game.
No, I was just going to add with, I just feel like you guys at Blackhawk, you do such a good job with getting other guys involved on the bench, and that just helps this time of year. I mean, depth-wise, you're not worried about necessarily Caleb getting a second foul and taking him out of the game.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you can rely on other dudes to come in and play the same spot and play hard, and Caleb isn't missed entirely that much, which is awesome.
I think our semi-state game was made that – glaring to everybody is our starting five went Zane Burke 21, Caleb 20, Callan Wood 20, Marcus Davidson 17, Boyer 10. Like,
yep.
You got a lineup that's putting up those kinds of numbers. You're going to be really hard to stop.
Oh, right. And I've loved Zane Burke since a couple of years ago, and I saw him the first time, and I've just talked about him a lot on this podcast. And yeah. I love how he plays.
Yep.
I think he's pretty underrated in the state.
We're obviously a little biased, but
our
coaching staff says that he's one of the most underrated players in the state.
Yep, and I've said
clearly
that
I underrate him.
Yeah.
You underrate anybody that's not directly Central Indiana.
That's not true.
And you guys had the LaGrange kid, right? Did he go down with injury earlier in the year?
It was like the second or third practice of the year. It was actually
Driving game. Oh.
Yeah, Boyer – him and Boyer dove for a loose ball, and obviously you've seen Boyer. His arm was stretched out, reaching for the ball, and Boyer landed right on his elbow and hyperextended his arm and did some damage to some ligaments. And they thought he was going to have surgery.
Okay.
And so he was going to be out for the year, and he ended up not having to do surgery, but still had to rehab and missed the whole year. So he's just now getting back to the point where he's been like on the sideline shooting stuff because it was a shooting arm.
Right.
So yeah, he missed the whole year due to injury.
I mean, and he's a piece for you guys too. Even so, that's tough. Yeah.
The 3A game. Finally, we get into some tight games, and this one was kind of a bizarre ending, maybe a little bit. You know, the situation before we get too deep into the individual stuff. Leo's down. Down three with, I don't know, 6 seconds left, maybe? Something like that. and they call their last timeout. And Silver Creek still had one free throw left. So obviously if Silver Creek hits that, you're down four. Actually, I think there was more time left than 6 seconds. If Silver Creek hits free throw, you're down four. You're going to need that timeout. So we weren't really sure why you would use your last timeout there and what the game plan would be. But one scenario would be get a quick two, get a delay a game foul or a delay a game call, like hit the ball out of the net. Don't kick it into the stands like Eric Davidson did a few years ago. We talked about that too because somebody asked, didn't that happen to the Noblesville sectional where somebody tried that? And it was Eric Davidson who just kicked it into the stands. I think he listens to this every now and then, so he may hear this. But, I thought the good game plan would be score a quick two, get a delay a game warning. That stops the clock. And now all of a sudden you maybe have a chance to get another catch and foul and hope the free throw thing works again. But Silver Creek missed the free throw. Needing three, Leo goes down and nobody guards DJ Allen at the rim for obvious reasons. They need three. And Leo just throws him the ball and he shoots. I think he missed or mishandled the catch. And then just went up and scored. And of course they're out of timeouts and they still didn't. I mean, you still could do the delay a game thing. I just wonder, without trying to be too critical of any coaching situation, what was discussed during the timeout. I guess we could, I know somebody asked him that. One of the media guys that I was sitting with asked him that during the press conference. And the response was no response. He didn't really answer it. And look, they're high school coaches. These dudes aren't getting paid millions of dollars like college coaches or NBA guys. You're not going to press them and follow up. But I am curious as to what was discussed during that timeout. What their plan was for getting that clock stop that they scored. And then, just obviously not hammer home the fact that, my God, if he misses, we need a three. And then Blake Davidson, who was awful in the first half, over-penetrating, struggling with the shot, but then who was brilliant in the second half. Did you get to watch any of that, Joe?
No, I listened to it. So I heard the radio broadcast, but I did not see any actual game footage.
He was outstanding in the second half. I mean, that's just I think he missed his first two shots. I mean, he was 6 for 23 in the game. He was I think he was 0 for his first 12. So he was 6 for 11 the rest of the way. Getting fouled. I mean, he just was so good in the second half. And then here he comes down, and you're thinking he's going to take the last shot. And then it gets dumped into DJ Allen, who, did what you do instinctively. You catch the ball and you score. But then they were looking around like they didn't know what else to do. And, I mean, part of me was like, man, just bat the ball into the stands, bat the ball into the seats behind the basket, get a delay of game. But that's 2 years – that's two times in a row now Silver Creek has won, kind of oddly. Like, I think the Culver win 2 years ago was such a – strange free throw performance where nobody could hit free throws and nobody could hit. It was a rock fight. This game wasn't a whole lot better from the shooting standpoint. I mean, Leo shot 30% and Silver Creek shot 34% from the field. You look at the box score, it's pretty evenly matched. 9 turnovers to 8, 15 rebound, offensive rebounds to 13, all the things that kind of tip possessions. But it was basically Silver Creek going 9 for 17 from the free throw line, Leo going 7 for 9, and it's kind of Silver Creek kind of keeping them in it by just not shooting the ball very well from the line. But the end of that, I guess I just would be curious to know what was said. I mean, it's not something to get too deeply on and criticize, but I mean, because Leo, they were never out of it. It was always kind of a tight game. I think at one point Silver Creek led by 6, maybe 7. And then Leo fought back. And then Davidson just got going. And Silver Creek didn't really have much of an answer for him. They did a great job on Trey Kaufman. They did a pretty good job on Cooper Jacoby, but he was able to convert 18 rebounds.
Jeez.
I mean, Trey had a double-double, so it wasn't like he was 5-for-17 from the floor. He just wasn't converting anything from mid-range, and they weren't letting him get into the post. DJ Allen did a hell of a job of manning the post and making things as difficult as possible for anybody that came in that direction. So
yeah, that's kind of one thing we talked about leading up to the game was, okay, who's guarding Trey? And then, okay, then who you got on Jacoby? And did Troyer end up guarding Cooper then?
Yeah. Okay. And you know,
that's kind of what we thought.
Cooper was 7-for-18. Troyer had a nice game. He had 6 points and 15 rebounds. It's not a bad game. But there's a lot of rebound opportunities that game. There's a lot of misses. A lot of misses. Yeah. So,
we kind of thought Ruble would have to get going from outside too, didn't we? We talked about that a little bit.
Yeah, and it looked like maybe early on he was, but then he forced a couple shots and it dried up. Because I know early on, sitting by Trevor Andershock and Jeff Shanley. Shanley's a Fort Wayne guy. And we talked a little bit about the way Ruble looked in the summer versus what he only averaged 4 points a game this year. And I thought he had a pretty good summer. And I know success-wise, they don't always translate, but I just was really impressed with Ruble in a lead guard capacity or as a go-to guy on that type of a team, figuring he'd at least be a really good, consistent option for Leo. So, but he had a good start and then it kind of tapered off, but Davidson was really cooking in the second half and I thought he was going to pull it off. And, but yeah, that last play was pretty interesting. I would love to know what the thought process was, what was expressed. You know, kid, look, it's a tough situation. You know, you're late game. There's a lot of pressure. And you know, that free throw's missed, it's live. It's, you know, you don't get a chance to set up. And I think the instinct would be, yeah, find the open guy and get a basket. But they needed three, unfortunately, and they didn't even approach it. So, anybody, anything to add there? I mean, I think Cooper Jacoby solidified his all-star bid. I mean, taking two from that team is, I think, going to be a given.
Yeah.
We've tried to dance around some scenarios where, you know, Hope should make it. But then if he does, is Ellen going to get two? Is Silver Creek going to get two? Is Waddell going to make it? I think Waddell's going to make it now. You know, there's just they can't all fit because I think we've got some no-brainers. And we're getting down to that, you know, Zach's all-star list didn't have anybody from Southwest Indiana on it. But, you know, I think Silver Creek's going to get two on. I think LN should get two on. That may be the one. That may be the one where, just like the junior all-star team, where Hope, I'm sorry, where Hughes gets kind of left out. I hope not, because I thought DJ played really well yesterday.
So is that do you think Amance's game yesterday kind of bumps him up?
No, he's on. He's Marion County Player of the Year. Period.
Okay, I keep forgetting about that. Yeah,
yeah, he's on. No, he was really good all year. Hughes was too. I just know he didn't make the junior all-star team. I thought that was an oversight.
I would be really surprised if Jacoby didn't make it on. I'm after the two games we played against him. I'm as big of a Jacoby fan as anybody.
Oh. Yep.
Tough. I think in the two games that we played against them, both at that Southport shootout, the first year he had like 36, and then this past season he had like 32, and the just scores in every kind of way possible. He's long, athletic, plays defense, defends the rim.
He kept them in it 2 years ago.
You said what?
He kept them in it 2 years ago.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And then Kaufman did get going in the second half, and they eventually overtook you guys. And this year Kaufman was hurt, and of course him and Northern.
Yeah.
But really, Jacoby, you know, really carried the load.
Yeah, I think it's a shame if he's not on. But then again, it gets get into the dicey conversation of who doesn't make it then, and that's
not we don't have
to be a part of.
I don't think any of us, we did a pod with three of us. I don't think any of us had Jaden Taylor on, who's committed to Butler. You're just getting down to a point. So if he's not on, we're looking at Ellen with two. We're getting into like an all-star discussion here. Ellen with two. Carmel with Waddell, who, you know, doesn't have like glaring offensive numbers, but it's been a long, it's a long, long time since the 4A champ. Well, I don't know that a 4A champ has not had an Indiana All-Star at some point. You know, obviously there's some guys that are juniors that end up making it the next year as seniors, but I'm talking about especially a senior who had the kind of game that Waddell had. I know we've not talked about the 4A game yet, but you're looking at Waddell as being kind of on the bubble. You're looking at a second Ellen kid being on the bubble. And then I think we were looking at Hope maybe being on the bubble, but me thinking Hope should be on over Sisley. And then, but people thinking Sisley's a lock. So something's got to give. Something has to give. And it'll just be, I mean, it's a great class. It will be interesting to see how that works out. So, but yeah, I think Jacoby's, if there was, you know, one of the bubble ideas was maybe that Silver Creek wouldn't get two on in a year like this, but I don't see how they can't now. So, and who knows, that was never in the consideration. I just, because like you, Joe, I'm a big Cooper Jacoby fan. So, but all right, man, Carmel Lawrence North. Wow. Very nerve wracking for a guy like me. When CJ Gunn got going, I was really nervous. It was great in the first half when he wasn't being super aggressive. It was terrifying in the second half when he was really getting going. And, you know, even that last shot he took that ended up short. Well, not the last shot, but there was one possession late in the overtime when they were down three, and he gets a decent look. And he just misses. I'm just like, oh my God, why are we letting him shoot the ball? Or why is Carmel letting him shoot the ball? And I know let's kind of a strong word, but you know, the big controversial play was the end of regulation, which ended up not meaning anything because Carmel didn't score on it. But there was some question about the officiating, there was no question. The officiating was consistent. There was a loose ball. Ellen made a nice stop, but the kid traveled. Beatty traveled. I think it was Beatty that traveled. The replay clearly showed he took three or four steps. Gave Carmel a chance with 0.3 seconds left to get a final shot off that obviously didn't take. Went to overtime. And they end up winning. And Brian Waddell was wonderful. He was efficient outside of maybe a little bit of a turnover stretch in the first half. Carmel did struggle with the top of Ellen's press. Again, a strength issue. That's the third game in a row where strength's been an issue for them. And, you know, but you look at guys that stepped up for them. Connor Joya, who usually gets about seven a game. He had nine, hit three threes. He was 3 for 4 from three. I mean, he was 0 for 4 inside the arc. Where usually he can get to the rim and finish every now and then. I thought DJ Hughes did a great job. I mean, DJ had three blocks. I think probably two of them were on Joya. Wack was wonderful, both in terms of kind of early shot making, taking the path when he could have it. And then, but he was 7 for 8 from the line. Waddell was 8 for 8 from the line. Carmel as a whole was 20 for 25 from the line, where Lawrence North was 6 for 17. And in an overtime game, that's where the difference was. I mean, Carmel was 5 for 11 from 3. Ellen was 2 for 12. I mean, Gunn was the only shot maker they had, really, other than Hughes right at the basket. Wack shut down Avance. That was huge. But then Shamar made the adjustment and found people. but Gunn was 2 for 8 from the 3-point line. Caden Beatty was 0 for 4. He always gets one shot. He always hits one. And in some cases too, where sometimes he gets them going. He didn't hit any this game. That was a big deal from just an observational perspective.
If you told me that before the game, and then I saw him after the game, I text you during the game and said, "Why is this dude doing shooting ball?"
Well, you were talking about his turnovers.
Well, the turnovers, but then why is he shooting threes?
Oh my, he's.
Oh,
I get it. Sometimes look, no one would ever teach Reggie Miller to shoot the ball like he did.
Right.
No, Caden Beatty, you got to understand something about this kid. There have been some times
– scholar athlete or whatever, too, I've heard, right?
Yeah, but there have been some times this year where Ellen's been on the ropes and he's gotten them going. It's almost like the Will Leary thing with Carmel, where there were a couple times this year, Bar Reeve and even the Lawrence North game, even though Carmel won that game pretty convincingly, it was kind of stagnant in the beginning and Leary loosened things up. Beatty's been that guy all year where you focus all this attention on Gunn, A. Vance Hughes – McCauley's out there getting offensive rebounds. Like he had three, all of his rebounds were offensive against Carmel.
Yeah.
I mean, McCauley had 11 points. He was 5 for 5 from the floor.
Yeah,
three offensive rebounds.
Top 250 football player, too.
Football player, absolutely. Yeah. But, he's going to be a possible quarterback at Indiana. But
Beatty was, and it wasn't so much the way he was shooting, it was just like shots going off the backboard and then.
Yeah. That could be. And that's fair in real time. But yeah, he's been a guy that. Maybe it's just one. It's like that Kidwell thing with Bar Reeve. Maybe it's just one, but it changes the dynamic because all of a sudden you remember we got to guard everybody. You know, and the way McCauley was active, and I was really impressed with McCauley. And again, these are just kids that are stronger bodies than what Carmel puts out there. And as a Carmel fan, those were things I worried about. You know, the other people would be thinking, well, these dudes aren't heralded, so why are we worried? Well, the answer is, well, because it's still an athletic game, and those McCauley's a heck of an athlete.
Oh yeah,
and he plays hard.
Yeah, definitely.
But he was the one interesting thing I thought from Lawrence North's perspective was that, look, there's times when Suter's best asset is playmaking. He's not always aggressive looking to score. There have been some games this year where he has. I think Waddell has been out in those games. Whoever C.J. Gunn guarded didn't score. I mean, that's just almost really how that went, especially the first three quarters. And I thought they should have put Gunn on Waddell more. As good as McCauley was yesterday, he really struggled keeping Waddell in front of him. And – you know, as long as he was able to get a clear path, I mean, it's just kind of one of those basketball things, too, where McCauley maybe didn't guard his yard, didn't widen that driving gap as much as he could. But Waddell had a really good game. I think Waddell secured his spot on the All-Star team. And as good as McCauley was in the offensive end, I thought maybe they should have put Gunn on him and figured out some other way to get A. Vance on Suter and, you know, moved Beatty, you know, moved everybody else around, you know, maybe put McCauley on Whack. I don't know, because Josh doesn't suit the ball that much. I don't know. I just would have played around with it. I would have made sure my best defender was on the guy going. And that was Gunn and A. Vance. Gunn was guarding Suter. It was pretty effective. I mean, between Pete and Waddell, they both had – between the two of them, they had 9 of Carmel's 16 turnovers. Most of Suter's were late. Waddell, he had 3 in the first half and 2 late. Go ahead, Joe.
What did the final turnover numbers for each team end up being? Because I was surprised.
Lawrence North only had 9.
Struggle with that.
Carmel had 16.
Okay, just because that's very uncharacteristic of Carmel to struggle with turnovers like that.
Well, not the last 2 weeks, though.
Oh, really?
And a lot of them was just getting in traffic. I mean, look, the Lafayette Jeff and the Gary West games, they got to where they wanted to go, but then when the help got there, they just were too – the help was strong and aggressive, and they struggled with the physicality of it.
I got you. That state game is the first game I've seen Carmel play all year, so I
– Yeah.
idea.
You know, there's a couple times where they dribble across half court, they get caught in traps. There's a couple times where they catch the inbounds pass against the press and they're not aggressive. They sort of wait for the trap to come. You know, and I thought there were times where the LN kids were just colliding into Carmel and there was no call, or at least no call immediately. And then it started to tighten up a little bit. And, you know, now maybe I've got bad angle. We were up in the rafters this year instead of down on the court. So maybe there were some things that we just couldn't see from 150 feet away. I mean, literally 150 feet away. But it still was – Carmel had to be tougher at the point of attack, and in a certain stretch they weren't. And they did sort of give up possessions at the end of regulation where they could have iced the game. And, you know, they obviously they won, and everybody's happy. I mean, I'm happy. But, you know, at the same time you know, you'd hate for – well, you'd feel good if you were Lawrence North and you come back and win that game because they never quit.
Yeah.
And that's something they could have – could. I think Carmel was one stop and score away, or one score and stop away, one of those two combinations of putting that game away. And Lawrence North never – there may have been a couple times where it was that, and Lawrence North would never let it happen. And I'm sure on the Carmel sidelines that they thought they were fouled more than they were. My only complaint from the officiating standpoint was I thought there were times on the inbounds where, or even on missed free throws, where LN were just displacing Carmel guys.
And how did that game last night compare to their regular season matchup?
The regular season matchup was turned into a dissection.
Okay.
LN was very aggressive, but they did not cover, they did not guard the off-ball movement well at all. Carmel kind of carved him up off the ball. And you know how I like that in general, right? You know, movement with purpose, things like that. LN was much more disciplined this game, much more disciplined. And I thought they were very effective. Carmel was more deliberate this game, I thought, than they were during the regular season game. But like I said, the regular season game, Leary hit three threes in the first half. And as much as he can get going like that, it still doesn't happen a lot. Like, he came in, played a minute and a half, and didn't get back in. And, you know, maybe the thought process is see what he can do when he's in there. You know, and if he can't, it's not our best defense. It's not their best defensive situation. But if he can get in there and create space, Orm came in. What else? Big drive late in regulation. I think it was – no, not late. I think it was – there was one stretch where Carmel was down, and I think they took the lead on a Waddell layup. Waddell went right down the paint.
Yeah.
And Carmel had subbed out Wack and put in Orm. And suddenly you can't leave Orm. So he played 4 minutes, and I'm guaranteeing you that was just 4 minutes of making sure nobody left him, because, you know, you can leave Josh sometimes, not because he can't shoot, it's because he won't shoot. So Wack came out. Sometimes it sort of became offense defense for a stretch there. And I think that's basically Orm's, especially his second half minutes, were him being offense defense with Wack. He had a decent stretch in the first half. I say decent. He played 4 minutes total. But but I looked up and I thought, oh, we've subbed Carmel. I keep saying we. I do hate when I do that, but it is what it is. Look, Gunn was 6 for 18. I think he missed his last four shots. You know, at that point, he's just chucking to try to, you know, get a basket. So really, he's 6 for 14. I think he had a slow start at the beginning. But what he was doing in between was phenomenal. I know I used happy as heck that he's still staying committed. And I like that he was, you know, he's pretty active on the glass, two offensive rebounds. And look, LN was 6 for 17 from the line, free throw line. He was 4 for 4. that means the rest of them were 2 for 13. So if they want to, you want to look at where they lost the game, it was probably right there. Just in terms of, well, just in terms of sheer numbers.
So oh, yeah, without a doubt. Yeah, free throws was definitely the case.
You know, and a lot of those free throws, I mean, Carmel jumped that total up 20 for 25, but a lot of those were late when Ellen was fouling. So, but anyway, Zach, you saw the end of the second half and overtime. Anything else stand out that
I
didn't blabber about?
No, the free throws was the big thing I was going to talk about with Ellen just missing. And Wack did a nice job at the end of hitting his, and Waddell hit a couple at the end, I believe. Even Charlie, I think, hit a couple too, didn't he, towards the end there?
Yeah, he was 5 for 8.
Yeah.
But Wack and Waddell were 15 of 16.
Wack missed one. Yeah, yep. Wack missed the one there towards the end. But yeah, other than that, they did what they had to do.
I thought there was a stretch there where Avance was trying to get going and Wack blocked him. And I don't know that I'd ever seen that before. So, but anyway, I was impressed with that. And I know it surprised the heck out of Shamar. But man, those guys didn't quit. Well, they're not going to, because Avance is a kid that never quits. Yep, he battles every second. So, but yeah, I was a little nervous when Beatty was getting some clean looks. I get it. Maybe he missed them bad. I don't know. I wasn't paying attention to how he missed them. But I mean, that, like I said, there's times where he gets going. He's just the same thing as Will Leary. There's times where they'll hit a shot and it'll just completely turn the game around, because now all of a sudden that's one more guy you got to guard.
Sure.
And it just opens it up for everybody else. So, at the end of the day, I think all the games went sort of according to plan. We all kind of thought that 3A game would be close, certainly closer than what some people thought. I definitely wasn't thinking Carmel was going to duplicate Ellen, what they did to Ellen early in the year. There's no way that was going to happen. And that was definitely going to be more of a street brawl than anything. I don't know what Ellen – I know Ellen came off a tight game the night before playing Carmel. Obviously, it was two weeks to prepare. They were ready, and so I think all these games kind of went like I thought they would. I would have enjoyed maybe watching some more efficient offense in the 3A and 4A games, but I don't think any of these teams the whole day shot very well. Any of them, right, Joe? I mean, you guys.
Outside of Zane and Boyer shot. I think Zane was 50% from three, and
yeah,
Boyer hit a couple. But other than that, like, Marcus only hit one, and yeah, as a team, we didn't shoot great.
6 for 15 from three is not horrible. That's 40%. I don't know what your normal volume is. I don't know what your normal volume is from the 3-point line, but that's a good percentage though. But yeah, as a whole, you shot 45% from the floor, but you had the first quarter, you were 36%, and the third quarter, you were 40%.
Yeah. The second half was just pound the ball inside to Caleb, and he was taking 2-footers for,
yeah, he was really good. So, and he hit a three. So,
yeah, that was funny. Actually, that three came right out of the start of the fourth quarter huddle, and Coach Davidson had literally just said, no threes unless it's off inside out, and Caleb catches that in transition, just pulls it, and everybody kind of chuckled and was like, well, when you make it, he's not going to say anything.
Right. Well, yeah, that's true. Yeah, sometimes we do. All right, man. Well, unless anybody got anything else in these games before we close out?
I don't think so.
Nope.
All right. Zach, you want to do your read? It ready?
You got yours. You want to go with yours first, or no?
Yeah, that's fine. I'll go ahead and go first. Courtside Indiana Podcast is on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, as well as SoundCloud. You could subscribe via each of these apps and have them delivered straight to your phone, tablet, or desktop. Do us a favor and leave us a rating and review. We'd love to have a 5-star rating, but definitely would look for some feedback. And with me, and now that the season's over, we're moving, transitioning into AAU. You know, in the weekend tournament action, we'd love to have some input on things you guys would like to hear about. So you can leave feedback there, or you can send us a DM at CourtsideIND on Twitter. And that's CourtsideIND on Twitter. Send us some DM on what you'd like for us to, some topics you'd like for us to talk about. So Zach, you ready?
Yeah, Box Out Sports is the leading online graphic solution, giving you the ability to create professional content in seconds. That's to highlight your teams and student athletes this season and all seasons throughout the school year. You can sign up for a free demo at boxoutsports.com. And like I always like to say, that's for any sport, not just basketball. You can do volleyball, baseball, tennis, any of those.
Joey, what do you got coming up this week? Any big contracts, closing any deals? What are you doing?
No, I mean, it's going to be a busy summer for us. We typically do like 350-ish lots of summer, and we're looking at doing just a little over 700 this summer, so doubling our workload. And so it's going to be full steam ahead from here on out with no practice.
That's true. Yeah, you're done. No more missing work, huh?
Nope.
No more missing work.
Nope.
All right.
You guys do any team camps typically, Joey, or no?
Yeah, we do in the summer. I'm typically not a part of any of that, but okay. Yeah, we usually have, I don't know if it's one or two.
Like St. Francis, they have a team camp going on there ever?
Yeah, I honestly, I'm not super involved in our summer schedule, so I don't know.
That's a good time. I like June. I like watching. It's like the start of the new season, basically. It's everybody, you know, kids graduate and it's time for new roles. And this is going to be the first time in 4 years the Blackhawk is going to be without Caleb First. It's a new era in Blackhawk basketball.
It'll be weird, and it'll take some getting used to.
Hey, our best wishes to, you know, to what Coach Davidson's going through.
Definitely.
Got to meet him when he was coaching you.
Yeah.
And liked him. And I mean, not that we wouldn't, but you know, it's, you know, anytime you get a new coach, you worry, especially as heavily involved in that community that Sefton was.
Yeah.
And still is, right? I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
Jay, I don't know Jay very well, but he's still around. Yeah. It's his son, right?
Yeah, it is. Gage.
Yep. Gage. Yeah. Yep. So certainly our best wishes, and appreciate you coming on and all that kind of stuff. So pass that along for us. I don't know if Coach listens or not, but definitely want to convey those thoughts and along with the stuff that everybody else has done. So
yeah, for sure. I'll definitely let him know. I know he'll definitely appreciate it. And I appreciate you guys having me on.
Yep. For those that listen every week, we appreciate it. And for those listening to us for the first time, hope you come back. And one final time, we want to thank Jim Moreland for letting Joey off work long enough to be one of our listeners every week. And hopefully this week he gets work done, because now he doesn't have to listen because he's a part of it. So, all right, guys. Thanks. I appreciate it. Take care.
Yep.
See you.